The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Dear all, welcome you all to today's discussion. In last year, and also in my previous discussions, I have discussed about value of practicing meditation, and I think gave some lessons to introduce meditation techniques as well. So today, talking about a very important topic, that is how to recognize the pathway and how to recognize the value of the pathway in order to develop meditation into a better level. So in our society these days, more than ever, we have a lot of different philosophical explanations, interpretations, techniques, and a lot of different practices to develop meditation. Personally, I believe that most of those practices have a very good base and background, so we can apply most of those techniques if we apply them correctly and develop our mind. So this Buddhist meditation techniques and Buddhist meditation system is also something like that. So when we practice meditation, when you practice the pathway, we have to recognize the most valuable benefit of the practice and also the other benefits as well. So as we all know, the most valuable benefit and most important benefit, most effective benefit of meditation would be to reach Nibbana. That is for those who believe in Nibbana. And most of the time in our community, we have different type of students. Some of my students also, they know nothing about Nibbana, and sometimes they don't really want to reach Nibbana, but they just want to practice some meditation. And then we have to help them as well, because meditation have no discrimination. If someone wants to practice all the way to reach Nibbana, that's good. If someone is practicing meditation just to relax themselves, just to achieve some level of happiness and stay happy, that's also good, no problem, because it depends on what you want. Because even Buddha's time, during the time of Buddha, not everyone wanted to reach Nibbana, but wanted to develop their mind. So it's like, looks like two different extreme ends, like Venerable he's a layperson, a young person called Vyagapaja. He came to Lord Buddha and he asked a question. His first question was, I am a layperson. I'm not like Lord Buddha or any other monk. I have no understanding about Nibbana or that level. So can you give me some simple advice for me to develop my life and to face my day-to-day life with happiness? Especially his question was how to develop my business, just like the questions today. It's in the record, you can see the Vyagapaja Sutta. His question is like, he asked, do you have any advice to develop my business? He's asking this question from Lord Buddha. Actually, if such a question was asked by a layperson today from a monk, sometimes that'll be a funny question. But actually, Lord Buddha took the question seriously. He answered it. He didn't make fun of that. He said, yes. If you want to develop your business, if you consider that's your happiness, there is a way. He gave like simple, I'm not going to teach the entire sutta today, but just referring to that. He said, yes, of course, if you work hard, if you manage your life well, and if you associate the correct people, good friends who help you, and if you balance your life, then you will be able to develop your business and have a nice life. So in his perspective, that is his happiness, that is his enlightenment to achieve the level that he wants to achieve. But when people were asked from Lord Buddha, dear Lord Buddha, what do you think? What is the most valuable achievement of meditation? He said, Nibbana. Develop your mind all the way to Nibbana, where you don't have any disturbances from your attachments or your anger-based mental factors, or your delusions. So that gave us a very clear idea about Buddha, that doesn't matter what you want, the teaching system is in a huge range, from the basic all the way to the ultimate goal. Basic mean that each and every one of us, for sure, like to have a happy life. Even for those who really want to reach Nibbana, they don't want to have a sad life, right? We just want to have a simple and nice life with a pleasant mental condition, pleasant environment, pleasant friends around us. We will enjoy that. We like that. But at the same time, you will develop yourself slowly into a level of ultimate conditions. There was a monk during the time of Buddha. He's not the only one, but there was wonderful story behind him, an example. Because when Lord Buddha announced, as you know, in the Parinibbana Sutta, it says that he mentioned that he is going to pass away in 3 more months. So there was a conversation between Venerable Ananda and Lord Buddha. So Venerable Ananda was there, and that's the time Lord Buddha announced that he is going to pass away in 3 months. They say, the sutta explains it in a very sad way, that Lord Buddha is going to renounce and he is announcing his death in the coming Vesak day. So then when that happened, the news spread through all the monks. So then this was kind of a teaching, kind of an understanding in between the monks those days. They knew the nature of Lord Buddhas are different, not like us. We don't know when we pass away. We think that we're going to live for 100 years or something, then suddenly some of us fall into sicknesses, and some of us live until the end of our time, and we pass away. We can't really calculate the exact date that we pass away. But Lord Buddhas, yeah, each and every Lord Buddha who lived before our Lord Buddha as well, they have this ability. Not only Lord Buddha, some Arhantas also had the same ability, that they had the ability to predict their future and say that when they're going to pass away exactly. So when a Lord Buddha stated such thing, that'll become a huge shock to those who love him, those who care about Lord, those who respect him. So this particular monk also heard the same news. You know, it was really shocking. When the news was spread, some monks even start crying. Some kings, some deities, lay people, they were so sad to hear that news. Some of them are sad, and some of them, like, then people start finding solutions. You know that there is a concept called Ayusankhara. If someone invite Lord Buddha to live for 20 more years, no, actually 40 more years, no? He could have lived 40 more years if someone invite. Before he's announced, he announced that he's going to pass away. After that, there will be no change to that plan. So no one, people are thinking, maybe we go back and invite Lord Buddha to live a few more years. Maybe we'll go and ask him to spend more time with us. But different people start finding different solutions. Even some of them are discussing about who will be the next leader after Lord Buddha. Someone had to lead our sasana. So who is the next leader? So different perspectives were there in society. Some monks were looking for a leader. Some monks were looking for solution. Some of them are thinking about inviting Lord Buddha to live for 40 more years. And some of them were thinking of having like a congregation and finalize the idea of Lord Buddha. A lot of different solutions were there. This particular monk thinked to himself, and he thought that, so Lord Buddha is going to pass away in a few more months. So what is the best thing that I can do for him? This is in Dhammapada, I think chapter 8 or 9, you can see the story. So he, I think it's in Appamadavagga, if I'm not mistaken, you can check that. So what he said, he thought that, if I want to do something for Lord Buddha, the best thing would be to reach the Nibbana before he passed away. So he had like 3 months of time. So he stopped talking to other monks. Usually, in those days, in the monastic tradition, in the monks' rules also strictly prohibit them to gossip, but in the monasteries, sometime in the evening time, when they finish their meditation, they gather for tea or coffee. And sometimes they discuss about their daily routine, about the challenges they have to face, like monastery management things, and plan about the next few days like that. So they generally talk about the things like that. So usually up to today also we have the same thing. Some monasteries now, among monks, we maintain WhatsApp group. It's easy. So we have a WhatsApp group. We chat about the tomorrow's plan in the group. But those days there were no such thing. There were no social media. So they have to gather every day evening and talk about what's going on tomorrow. So every time most of the time, there were like a lot of gatherings. You can see in the history, there were a lot of gatherings. Every day they gather. And then they talk about the plan for the next day, and then if there are any changes to the plan, and they plan their week, plan their month, like that. Especially in the rain retreat, they plan the entire rain retreat. So there were a lot of discussions going on. So this particular monk stopped going to all these discussions, stopped associating with the monks, and stopped like giving away a lot of things and focusing on meditation only. So now other monks were worried about it. And then they thought that, okay, so this monk, maybe he's sad because Lord Buddha have announced that. They said that that particular monastery, there were around 700 monks. So almost all of them was not happy about the announcement. But this monk, maybe he's sad, maybe he's depressed, so that's why he don't want to talk to other monks and he want to stay away. So then they decide to bring this matter to Lord Buddha. Because one of our monk is like maybe facing some difficulties after this announcement. He's not coming to the common Sangha gatherings now. He's not talking to us anymore. He don't really, you know, mix up with other monks. He just listen. He just look at the plan and go back. So then, before going to Lord Buddha, before inform that, they ask him, what is going on? What is wrong with you? You were fine before and you were nicely getting along with other monks as well, but now you're not doing it. And he said that, no, because I have a determination. I need to reach the enlightenment before Lord Buddha passes away. So that's my determination. I had to work hard for that. So that's my goal. So I'm working towards that. So I can't waste my time to talk to you guys or do anything else. But I have very limited time to reach this particular goal. That's my gift for Lord Buddha before he passed away. And then those days, definitely if this statement were heard by Arahantas, they will appreciate it. Even a Sotapanna person, they will appreciate it. Even a person who understands how valuable it is to reach the Nibbana, they will definitely appreciate this. But some of the monks, they were concerned about it as well, because they didn't have that much of idea how valuable it is for us to reach to the ultimate level. As I mentioned before, it's okay. Different people can have different enlightenments. Like that's what you want, it's totally fine. But there's an ultimate level, the ultimate goal that you can achieve. So those who are focusing on the ultimate level, for sure, they will feel happy about it. So a group of monks, they went to Lord Buddha, and then they informed this to Lord Buddha, saying that, dear Lord Buddha, one of our monk is facing some difficulties these days because of this matter. So this Bhante is practicing meditation diligently. He's not participating to any other activity. So what do you think about it? And they asked, do you know what are his motivations? He said, yes, his motivation is to reach Nibbana before the end of your life. And Lord Buddha said that, if someone can show their respect to me, this is the best way to show the respect. There's no other way, no better way to show the respect than developing yourself. Even in Dhammapada it says that. Of course, don't take it in a wrong way. offering candles and all these offerings to Lord Buddha gives us meritorious deeds. I also do that. I also encourage that. That's not wrong. Offering candles, offering whatever the flowers, whatever things that you offer to Lord Buddha and do all these meritorious deeds is very good. We also do that. But Lord Buddha mentioned that the best way to offer him something is not to offer a candle or flower or food or drinks or anything, but offering by the principles. Developing those qualities within you is the best way to treat him. So he appreciated the monk. Not only that, actually, he managed to fulfill his goal before the passing away of Lord Buddha, before his parinibbana. This Bhante managed to reach the enlightenment. So Lord Buddha said, this is the best way if you want to treat me, if you want to tribute Lord Buddha, show the gratitude. The best way to show the gratitude is to practice yourself up to the ultimate level, and that will help you yourself as well to reach the ultimate level. So this gives us a very good understanding about where we should keep our attention in order to develop meditation. But in that pathway, as I mentioned before, it's totally fine for us to have our personal goals, because I also personally believe that even in the text we have a lot of evidence to show that each and every individual are different and they have different faculty levels, indriya faculties. So different faculty levels are there. So those who have different faculty levels will have different interests, different happiness levels, different abilities. So then we have to respect that difference, and that will help us one day to achieve the level that we want to achieve. We have to stay in that particular comfortable level and also thinking of what is the best we can do. That's very important. So in the same discourse, Lord Buddha explained about the lights of the world. He said that there are different type of lights in the world, different type of brightnesses in the world. So the greatest energy source and the greatest light that we can give an example is the light of the sun. Back then, for sure, they didn't have all the electricity and all, so for sure, sun is the most bright and the resourceful energy source, I think, up to today, for the human civilization, for sure. And for all the life in the earth. So he said, sun is the most powerful light and most beneficial light that we have. And that lights up the entire world. And the light of the moon, especially in the full moon day, can partially light up the entire night. And light of the fire, back then there were no electricity, so today we can convert that to electricity. Light of the fire would be the most beneficial when you create light artificially for yourself to light up your house or meditation hall. So those lights will help you to guide your life through this journey. But the light of wisdom would be more powerful and the most meritorious and most important light among all these different lights that can show you the reality. So he compare the light of sun and light of wisdom. Light of sun, we can also consider these days, because this example is about the sight, about what you can see. So we can consider any artificial light, fire, moon, or light of sun, all of them together, that gives us the visible spectrum. So we can see things by using our eyes. So light of sun will help us to see those things. Simple example. You can see there's a difference between colors under sun, under fire, and under moonlight. Different. It's not the same. If you look at something in the bright daylight, you will see a different color. If you look at the same thing in a full moon day night under sunlight, you'll see a slightly different color. If you look at the same object with the support of fire, you will see a different color. Of course, if you replicate the same frequency of the sunlight by using artificial light, you will see the same, but don't go to that up to that much of scientific matter, but simply, the time of Lord Buddha, naturally you can see under fire is a different color, under sun is a different color, under sun is a different color, under moon is a different color. So you can see the difference of colors just by looking at it. That gives an idea for us. The light that we use to see things gives us the idea what exactly the thing that we're looking at. So it's not the reality then. So we're looking at something by using a different type of light. The light helps us to recognize the object. If you have the ability to see the infrared and ultraviolet, you will see different. You will see green and pink color, purple color objects. So, which means that it's not the object gives us the idea. It's not the concept or the matters in the society that gives us the idea. It's the way we look at it. It's the source that we use to look at it. If you use sunlight and moonlight and fire, you will see three different colors, three different shapes maybe. Maybe you won't be able to see the exact shape in the different colors. In the same way, if you use the light of wisdom, you will see things beyond that visible spectrum. Now, we can see things. I'm not saying that by using light of wisdom, you will see infrared and ultraviolet, but you will see more things, concepts, reality. You'll understand what's going on really within you and also around you. Sometime, I think I gave this example in most of my discussions. Sometime, the words that we hear can have different meanings. But we sometimes get angry. We sometimes reject those understandings just because we hear that, and also just because we have the understanding about the particular words that we hear. As an example, if you were called donkey by someone, you will feel bad, for sure. No one like to hear that. But actually, if we grew up in a culture and a society where they consider donkey as a maybe an auspicious animal, as a brave animal, as a beautiful animal, then everyone would like to use that, right? That, as an example, if someone call you lion these days, you are brave like a lion, you will not consider that as a blame. You will consider that as a compliment. But if you grew up in a culture saying that lion is also an animal, animals don't have wisdom like humans, so if you call by someone, if you call an animal, then all the animals, all the names that you were called are not good. If you were brought up in such an environment, even if someone calls you a lion, you'll get angry. Because you don't want someone to call you in such a way. So it's the way you're brought up. If you're brought up in a society where they venerate a donkey, in a way, actually, some cultures, there were, because they helped to transport a lot those days, to move things from here to there. And as an animal, he helped a lot. He's a hardworking animal. So then, if someone like a donkey, and if someone appreciate, then if someone call you donkey, you'll feel happy. You can see different cultures appreciate different animals in a different way, and they're happy to hear that. So it says, gives an idea that it's not the words that we hear, it's the idea in our mind. It's not the things that we see, it's the understanding in our mind. So the reality and the concept are always playing this game with us. So that's why Lord Buddha says, it's just like walking in the darkness. Even though you have sunlight, moonlight, and the light of fire, you're still walking in the darkness because we are not looking at the concept and the reality by using the light of wisdom. So that's why he say that a person who develop himself up to a ultimate level will unlock all the darkness and light up all the corners in our mind by using light of wisdom. To look into our mind, to look outside of the mind, look at the world, we don't need light of wisdom up to that level. You can use a torchlight, you can use sunlight, moonlight, all these things. But to look into your mind, you can't use the sunlight or moonlight or fire or any other artificial light. Only light that you can investigate and look into your mind is the light of wisdom. So again, I'm using the word wisdom again and again. That's referring to prajna in Pali. Sometimes in Sanskrit you can say prajna and panya in Pali. This concept of prajna, concept of wisdom, is very difficult to understand sometimes. Simply, I can say the understanding of the reality is called wisdom. So it's not something that you have to have like a very high IQ or high level of knowledge, or you have to pass certain exams to go there. No, it's your understanding. It depends on the way and the level that you can accept the reality. Like as an example, we can see the ultimate reality is impermanent. And then we can see not pain, but you can know the suffering, concept of suffering. Again, sometimes people understand this suffering as pain. The word dukkha, suffering, is not pain. It's about unable to cope and unable to handle the change. So that's a different thing. Change is the anicca, change is the impermanence. And unable to handle that, unable to tolerate that is considered as suffering. It's not pain. So sometimes we mix up pain and suffering, but actually suffering is an understanding. It's understanding that you understand that I'm unable to tolerate and face the truth. And non-selfness, it's about looking to yourself and understand that whether there's a person or a system or a process. Simply anicca, dukkha and anatta. So a person who is in understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta, so I can simplify the wisdom saying that a person who understands impermanence, non-selfness and suffering into the best level have the highest wisdom. So this understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta represents the level of wisdom. So in a simple way, a person who have high wisdom will have high tolerance. A person who have high wisdom will have less anger. A person who have high wisdom will have less attachments. A person who have high wisdom will have less delusion. So now you can measure that. Don't measure outside, don't measure your friends and family members, and especially husbands and wife. That'll have a devastating result. Examine yourself. Examine yourself and see whether you're getting angry. Can you handle it? And what is the level of anger that you can handle? I'm not saying that each and every one of us are unable. We have different levels of handling the anger. That's the level of your wisdom. And personally, most of the time, in my meditation advice, I say, do not suppress that. Because sometimes what we do in our meditation, we suppress our anger, we suppress our attachments, we suppress our delusion. It's like suppressing a rubber ball in the water. Whenever you give it up, it comes back. We try to understand that. We try to analyze that. There are two different methods in Buddhism that we use. One is concentration and the other is analyzing. Samatha and Vipassana. So when you concentrate, you try to understand what's really going on there. When you get angry, when you're attached to something so badly, when you have delusion in your mind, then like ego and all. So we try to understand that, what's going on there. Just by looking at your anger, just by looking at your attachments, just by looking at your delusions, then you can have certain level of understanding. Say, okay, this is the level of my anger. Okay, so I have this anger. So these are the reasons for my anger. So I can see this is the level of my anger. That understanding itself will calm down yourself and prepare yourself to face and handle that anger and attachment and delusion as well. Vipassana, the insight will give you the other way. You analyze what's going on there. What are the reasons for this anger? What are the roots and how it develop, how it increase, how it decrease? And all these different tools, you analyze them. So in the insight meditation, what we do, we look into ourselves and we try to analyze the level of anger, level of attachment, reasons for that, and facts that can trigger our anger, facts that can control and calm down our anger. All these different adjustments. Then you will see, okay, so these are the facts and figures that increase my anger. These are the facts and figures that calm down my anger, so I can handle it. That's wisdom. So by using wisdom and concentration, you can analyze yourself. That's the only thing that Lord Buddha asks us to do. But what we do most of the time, we analyze the others. We analyze others and we consider, okay, that guy is angry, so he have less wisdom. Or that guy is attached, so he have less wisdom. That is wrong. So that can create, that is actually part of delusion. If you start analyzing others about their anger, attachment and delusion and all, then you understand that that's your delusion. There's high level of delusion. You know, analyzing the external world. And also, if you deeply look into this concept, you can see that we are actually unable to analyze others because we do not recognize the person in front of us by their mind. We recognize by their reactions. We recognize by their appearance, by recognize their words. You can, even though there's a person next to you and live with you for 100 years, you will only recognize him or her by using your 5 senses. The 6th sense is something that we develop later based on the information that we receive from the 5 senses. So no matter how well you know the person in front of you, you will know his appearance. You will know his sound. You will know this person's smell. You will know this person's taste. You will know this person's touch. There's 5 things you will know. You'll recognize the person in front of you, next to you, your best friend, maybe your partner, maybe your parents, kids. You'll know them by using those information that you receive by your 5 senses. And then you will analyze, you will have an understanding about the person based on the appearance, and you will create an understanding about this particular person in front of you in your mind. That's why same person can have different understandings. We can see that in our family members, we have a certain understanding about our family members, right? Because we live with us. We live together with them. So we know this person is like that, the other person is like that. So we have some understandings. And we say that's correct because we have been with them for a long time. And then as an example, you can say, sometimes parents say that their kids, they're not so nice at home. They're not so nice and not so polite to their parents, but they're so polite to the other people. So if you ask the same question from 2 different environments, you will get 2 different answers. The society will say, this kid is really nice, this person is really good, he's very respectful, very responsible, he's very neat and clean and all. But if you ask the same question from parents, parents say, no, Bhante, this guy is not neat at all, he's not friendly at all, he's angry all the time. It's because the way you analyze the person based on the things that you can see, appearance. Of course, the person can have 2 different lives, 2 different behaviors, for sure, but the behavior also we recognize by using our senses. So we have a recognition of the person based on senses, sometime maybe analytical understanding. We can't go beyond that. So that's why analyzing the external world will not give you that much of results. Will give you some results, depend on your motivation, especially if you want to deal with someone, if you have to work with someone. If you want to find out like how to work with this person, what should I change if I want to work together with this person without getting involved into any difficulties? Yeah, then in that case, you can analyze the person, you can analyze his personality, you can analyze what things that trigger his anger and all, and then you can slowly develop a connection. That's okay. There's another teaching like that. If you look into Karnimitta Sutta and different sutta discussions that we talk about, how to work together with others, yes, of course. But if you are understanding about, if you talk about how to develop yourself, if you go to the deepest understanding that you can have about all those mental factors, you can only have that understanding about yourself. So in a simple way, I can summarize that to a 1 sentence. If someone want to analyze yourself and the world, you can analyze yourself into the ultimate level and to the deepest level and like all the way until you reach Nibbana. But you can never analyze another person up to that level. You can analyze that person up to a level to cope with the other society, cope with the environment, cope with them, to work together. But you cannot analyze someone up to the ultimate level unless you are in such a level. So the best and the most powerful way of developing ourselves is to look into yourself and look into your attachments, look into your deletion, look into your anger-based mental factors, and use the wisdom to understand them. Use your wisdom to control them. Use your wisdom to guide them in a proper direction, so you will be able to settle down your mind, settle down yourself, and slowly you will be able to reach your direct your life into the ultimate level. So this is one of the motivation for a meditation to keep in their mind and keep that message always. No? I have to analyze myself. I have to look into myself by using the light of wisdom, with the understanding of impermanency, suffering, and non-selfness. So this is just a summary. If we have to analyze this, it's like a broad subject. You have to study about impermanence, suffering, and non-selfness. There are different concepts in Buddhist teaching system, and have very deep explanations about this. And also we have to understand and study about the ultimate levels and Nibbana, understandings of stable concentration levels and all. And also, I will end the discussion by saying, by explaining simply, in the beginner level, if someone is not interested about the ultimate level and don't understand that much, don't really want to go up to that complicated level, but just want to have a simple and controlled and happy life, not controlled really, like maybe very well analyzed and happy and peaceful life, of course. A simple compassion-based meditation, a simple understanding of satisfaction, a simple understanding of simplicity, those kind of things will help you, for sure. Just like the advice to Vyagapadja, when he asked the question to Lama Buddha, he said that work hard. Of course, if you, as a layperson, if you want to develop your life, you have to work hard. And you have to save and manage your life well. And you have to balance. So he gave like three examples, like three different advice to develop his business. Like he asked him to wake up early in the morning and work hard and put your entire effort to your whatever you're doing. And then when you earn something, you should have like a proper savings plan, and you have to save the money according to that. And you have to save your time as well, time and money, you balance that. And then at the end he said you have to balance your life. You have to spend according to the amount that you earn. You have to be careful about that. And you have to maintain a balanced life with the family and people around you and friends and society. So then these three advices are there. And the last one he said, have to be careful with the friends. Kalyanamitrata. You have to associate good friends. Bad friends can destroy all this. Bad friends can influence you not to work hard. The wrong friend can influence you not to save properly. A wrong friend can influence you not to have a balanced life. That influence is very effective, even though we don't recognize that. Influence is very effective on human mind. I think each and every one of us are, including me, we are influenced by things in our society, in our environment. As an example, if a monk decides to become a monk and spend a monk life, you need a huge influence from the society and with the understanding of Dhamma. So that's why we always say, associate the Kalyanamitras, noble friends. They will influence you to meditate more. They will influence you to practice, precept. They'll influence you to listen to more Dhamma. So you will change your perspective of your life if you associate friends like that. And if you associate another friend who is not influencing you to meditation, who is influencing you to do other things, you'll waste your life and waste your time by that influence. I think I don't have to teach you about the influence these days, especially with the social media. The influence that we are receiving is huge. Sometimes, if you look into all different perspectives and understandings, we will stuck in a place that we don't understand what to believe anymore, because you have information to prove everything these days. So then it's very difficult for you to go to a specific understanding and guide your mind into a specific direction. because you're influenced by a lot of different pathways. So the best thing is to that, find the friends, associate a community, a society, where they encourage you to develop your mind and develop yourself and cultivate good qualities and direct you to spiritual direction, to ultimate level of reaching the Nibbana. So that's the spectrum in Buddhist pathway, from simple to the ultimate level. So I'd like to share this medicine with all of you. May all of you share this meditative deeds, be happy, healthy, peaceful and content, and reach the ultimate bliss of Nibbana by the power of these meditative deeds. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So if you have questions, now you can ask them. I can answer questions for another 15 minutes.
Is there any questions from the floor? We'll just alternate between the floor and online questions. Start with the floor. If not, I'll ask a question. Thank you, Ajahn. That was a really inspirational talk. Your analogy with the light actually had me thinking about how we've been peering into the universe for centuries with various telescopes, with the Hubble telescope, and now we've got the James Webb telescope. And each time we're seeing more and more detail as to what the universe looks like, and we still don't know what it is. We don't know what's coming up next. With the wisdom that you were talking about, is it much developing in much the same way, where at the moment, as we're peering inwards, is that in a very much similar way that the granularity sort of increases, or it's finer and finer granularity, but there's almost like no, you can never be sure exactly what you're seeing.
Exactly. Even by using telescopes, you can see that you're not seeing the present, you're seeing the past actually. If you look into the space more, you see a light that existed a few light years ago. So that's why looking into yourself is the present moment. You're like the idea, understanding of light, because I think all of us are influenced by the science. So whenever we use the word light, it comes to our mind the visible spectrum. That's a light for us. And then for a person who has studied science for further, we have the infrared and ultraviolet in the corners. So we have that scientific understanding of light. And if we live in a society where they talk about where the influence is philosophy. I think I mentioned that before as well, like the time of Lord Buddha, the intellectual language between other teaching systems was philosophy. And these days, the intellectual language that we use is maths. So we use mathematics as the foundation of all of the studies that we study these days. So we are influenced by science and mathematics and all this information, especially these days we will believe statistics more than what we can see in front of us. Even if we can, if we see something in front of us, like as an example, we have seen some people in discussions, they explain about their experience and family, and we can easily break that experience by saying, no, statistics are like that, so you're wrong. So we say that the experience is wrong by using statistics, and society believes that. But actually someone is talking about the experience, someone is talking about their family, how he experienced his society. His society may be small, but it's not the calculated answer. But if you live in a philosophical world, like the time of 6th century BC, India, Lord Buddha's time, when you talk about light, they don't look at the visible spectrum. Those days when you say light, is it light mean that, is it understanding? Is it like the brightness in your mind? Is it the brightness of the understanding that you develop? So they have a lot of different light concepts. Especially the words that we use these is also like quite a bit complicated, because in Nepali we have like the word called prabha, aloka, like that. So those words gives an understanding like the happiness that we radiate throughout the society to others also can consider as light. So it's happiness, light of happiness. So just like we use light of wisdom, it's light of happiness. Like we can have, there are some friends around us, they have very huge compassion, And because of the compassion, we are happy to be with them. We feel that light. We feel the light of happiness in their society, in their presence, in their appearance, and in their behaviors. So we experience that light. So in the same way, the light of wisdom is the light that you can analyze yourself at the ultimate level and understand what is really going on in there. So that's totally, even now I'm talking about this philosophical understanding of light based on an education and a society that I was also influenced by science and up to some level. So even my understanding about light also may be much far away from the philosophical understanding of light of 6th century BC. So that's why it's very difficult to relate sometime to the real philosophical understanding of the 6th century BC understanding of these concepts and to today. So yeah, we'll see. You know, slowly study and practice meditation and we'll be able to relate up to some level. Yes.
One question there. Thank you, Ajahn. We'll just take an online question that relates to your talk. Ajahn Brahm says that the best way to repay a teacher is by living a happy, virtuous, and compassionate life. The Lord Buddha said that the way to repay your parents is by establishing them in virtue, generosity, faith, and wisdom. Mm. What if the teacher or the parents pass away and I have not accomplished nibbana, but I'm still in the progress? Mm. Even if they have passed away, can I still repay them by practicing?
Definitely, yes. Simple answer, yes. I'll explain a little bit. Answer is yes. You can, even we can show our gratitude to Lord Buddha today by practicing, because we know that clearly Lord Buddha have passed away. And maybe our teachers who gave us this knowledge, like my teacher who ordained me and give all the knowledge, and he passed away as well. So we still show our tribute to our teachers and show the gratitude of our teachers. And even Lord Buddha also mentioned that even when he passed away, the best way to show the gratitude and show that respect to them is to practice the pathway. And also in this discussion, no one is wrong, because there are different levels of showing the respect and different communities and different understandings are different. Even Lord Buddha have mentioned, as you said, in one sutta he mentioned that the best way to repay him, especially in this particular story, and Dhammapada mentioned that the best way to repay, best way to show the gratitude to Lord Buddha is by developing your mind up to the ultimate level. And in another discussion we can see that as you say, best way to repay your parents is by practicing good qualities. And there are other different discussions, we can see that different explanations and guidance. It's because he explained them based on the question and the person in front of him. Mm-hmm. So this is like a question and a statement given by Lord Buddha, to especially in suttas, you know, different suttas. He explained to that particular person in front of him to give him the best benefit. So if someone passes away in our family or even parents, teachers, we can still show the tribute and gratitude by developing these qualities. Even if they, imagine that, no, in our belief, we know that the possibility that our parents pass away and they live in deity's realm, if they can see that, they will be happy to see that their kids are still practicing good qualities and sharing merits to them. They'll be happy about it. Even though I'm not so sure they will use it or not, but they'll be happy to see that.
Thank you, Ajahn. I think we have a question on the floor.
Thank you, Ajahn, for that great talk. I would like to propose that lack of wisdom is the cause, at least the advances in technology has not been translated to high quality life in humanity in general. I'll give you an example. Life expectancy, although we talk big about technological advances, I'm from medical background, hasn't actually increased life expectancy in the West in the last decade or so. In fact, when you look back, Paleolithic type era, we actually lived into the sort of same life expectancy, say for an example, 10, 15 years back. While we don't know the answer, that in the West that people are actually dying few years earlier now compared to 10, 15 years back, perhaps it is this lack differences in dichotomy, that technologically we have advanced, but as humans, we have gone down. The other irony of this is the very social media who is keeping us away from each others are spending a lot of time for those who people create Google, Facebook and other things to put their people together in face to face to keep us well away from each others using the same social media, which I find somewhat hilarious.
Yeah. Also, it's possible that with this complicated matters that we face, maybe we are losing the happiness. Losing of happiness will definitely lead to a loss of the time that you live, right? Because life expectancy is very clearly connected to the condition of your mind. So if you maintain like happy and enlightened and bright mind, then that might help you to live longer and healthier. And not really like everyone, but majority, it's possible. It's a high possibility, but a very huge effect. As you say, it's possible. So that's why, not even in the Buddhist tradition, but even before that, even during Buddha's time, there were other meditation teachers who were developing their mind up to a higher level. And then they say that those days that they meditate a lot and those days that they practice a lot, the society was more peaceful. And people lived happily. So that's why practice and understanding about the mind, understanding about the self will lead to a safe and comfortable society as well.
Thank you, Ajahn. There's another online question. For myself, the person says, I find psychology and plant medicine have helped me to understand myself better. How do you, or how does Buddhism, see these modalities to understand ourselves and understand life and develop wisdom? So just psychology and plant medicines.
This is the modern way of approaching psychology and plant. During Buddha's time, there were different sage and different people who practiced them. Even one person called Singhalaka, he tried to understand his life by paying respect to different directions, north, south, east, west, up and down. He understood. Lord Buddha even did not say he's wrong. He just gave little interpretation to his understanding, but he said, yes, whatever you believe and make you happy, as long as it's not harmful to the society and to yourself, can help you to achieve that. That's why I say it's a spectrum of happiness. So you're happy with the enlightenment and the ultimate level, or you're happy with the simple, happy life that you're spending right now. So it's like a huge range. So you can be in any of this place in this particular range. So if you are happy about the life, and if you're not hurt anyone, if you develop yourself by practicing such a manner, that will be totally fine, because Buddhism have nothing against that. Even Buddha have appreciated the qualities of other teachers as well, those who have practiced good qualities back then, about their meditation, about their practice, about their values and everything. Even Buddhism have adopted some of them from other teachings as well, those who are effectively good, and we are still practicing some of them. So then that's totally fine. If you find psychology and the plant-based lifestyle is suitable for you and gives you happiness, and if you're happy with it, good. And at the same time, you can study about other things, Buddhism and meditation and all. Then you will find more information and more related information maybe to help your practice as well. Looks like it's the time for me to... Yes. So I have an appointment.
Right. Thank you, Ajahn.
So I'd like to share these merits to all of you to be happy, healthy, peaceful, and content, and reach the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Etavata chamhehi sabbatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Etavata chamhehi sabbatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Etavata chamhehi sabbatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Idamme nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idamme nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idamme ñātinaṃ hotu sukhitā hantu ñātayo idamme puññaṃ āsavakkhaya bhaṃ hotu sabba dukkha pamujjhatu sāntu.